Thank you. Item 26, discussion of possible action on adoption of Robert's Rules of Order as guideline for conduct of meetings and designation of parliamentarian. Matt Phillips.
Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about Robert's Rules. Many of you are already familiar with them, know that they're a longstanding set of guidelines for the orderly conduct of business of deliberative bodies such as this one. Currently, the way the board operates is y'all have not officially adopted Robert's Rules of Order. When there is a question of order, as there was during the last board meeting, staff does refer to Robert's Rules in order to determine the answer. However, it's not officially adopted in the board's bylaws. If there is a drawback to Robert's Rules, it would be its rigidity. The guidelines of Robert's Rules are very strict and require strict adherence to those rules. Anywhere in the board bylaws where it's silent on a particular motion, as in the vote requirement motion, anywhere in the bylaws where it's silent, Robert's Rules would control. Some of those motions require, instead of a majority, which is how the board usually operates, some of them require two-thirds, some require unanimous consent. So there is a degree of flexibility lost in adopting Robert's Rule of Order. And also, if the board were to adopt Robert's Rules of Order, there would be the need of appointing a parliamentarian. So the choice you have for you today is either to continue to operate with Robert's Rules kind of loosely as a guide, or to adopt them officially and to essentially begin to operate by them, and also appoint a parliamentarian. Now, with regard to parliamentarian, different deliberative assemblies do it differently. Some of them appoint one of their members to be the parliamentarian. Others appoint an independent person, such as a staff member. That's going to be at your discretion. Should you all choose to adopt Robert's Rules of Order, who you all would want to be your parliamentarian. So this is going to be up to y'all.
Go ahead. If we adopt this, does it affect our bylaws in any way in regards to the vote percentages?
No, the way it's written, if you look at it up here, anywhere in which bylaws have already, you've already got something adopted in the bylaws continue to control. But anywhere where the bylaws are silent, which they are on a lot of stuff, Robert's Rules would control.
Can you just give me an example? I've been on vacation, so maybe
I'll give you an example of how the bylaws would control over Robert's Rules. Okay? Right now, a quorum of a committee of the board is a third. The bylaws state that. Whereas, in accordance with Robert's Rules, a quorum is usually going to be a majority. Now, there's a difference there. However, our bylaws currently say that it's a third, and therefore it would still be a third. That wouldn't be affected. So, I mean, there's a difference there. However, currently, the way that y'all operate, certain motions that are made by the board are sometimes adopted via majority vote. If in accordance with Robert's Rules, it requires a two-thirds, it would then require two-thirds if the bylaws are silent. Now, I'd have to look at the list of motions to determine which ones those would be.
Another place where that the bylaws would take effect, and the last sentence of the whole resolution sums it up. Another place where it would take effect is in the definition of ex officio members of committees. That is defined in our bylaws.
Right.
And would supersede anything that's in Robert's Rules of Order.
Anything currently adopted in the bylaws supersedes Robert's Rules. But anything that's silent does not, unless new bylaws are adopted.
Jean?
Well, from what I've observed, and first, I have several concerns, but first, it is restrictive, and sometimes Robert's Rules of Order becomes the issue rather than what you're actually working on. And as you know, Robert's Rules of Orders is not perfected, and there's always room for disagreement about how you read the rules, Robert's Rules of Orders. So often, rather than tending to business, you become embroiled in discussing Robert's Rules of Orders and how it's perceived by one person over another. It also requires additional preparation before a meeting. The chairman has to know on each subject that comes up, each question that comes up, how long the members will be allowed to speak, what is germane to the subject, those kinds of things. So if you adopt Robert's Rules of Order, correct me if I'm wrong. Am I wrong?
No, to the extent that our bylaws are
signed. So it requires additional preparation. It often has an effect of quelling debate on an issue. So I just put that out there. But then I also had a question. As a quasi-government entity, are we required by any other statute to adopt Robert's Rules of Order?
Not to my knowledge. Not that I'm aware of orally.
Okay.
And this, to give you an example, this is Robert's Rules. This is the actual version. This is the simplified version.
And we have three other books. One of them literally is, what's the title of it? For Dummies?
I'm the one that originally asked us to go on the agenda, and I agree with her that sometimes Robert's Rules are restricted. But I would admonish you to remember that the opposite value of order is anarchy, and to many degrees that's what's happened in the past. The second thing is, as far as the preparation is concerned on deciding how long some people can speak and all of that, the chairman controlled this very easy by starting off by saying by unanimous consent, and this is done in many arguments. If there's no objection, then whatever you said is our term of speaking is the term of speaking. There's not any debate. There's not any real issue there. So the fact that you do have to have this extra preparation, it's not onerous. I've done it for years at other organizations, and it can be done quite easily. The third thing I would like to point out is that in this morning's presentations by the people from PK, were asked to table the rent lease discussion for 90 days. I would suggest that we have no mechanisms whatsoever on this board for tabling anything.
Right.
And I would call for out of order if we were asked to table anything, because we have no mechanism and there is nothing that allows this board to table anything. Unless we adopt Robert's Rules of Order, a lot of the things we do can be objected to in that direction. I think it's highly important that we get some rules of operation in here. Other organizations do it simply to provide a mechanism to do what needs to be done. Ms. Charmant.
I'm assuming that whenever our bylaws were created, we looked at Robert's Rules of Order and tried to incorporate them, because, as you said, there are just probably a couple of instances where our bylaws overrule or bypass Robert's Rule of Order. So I'm assuming, as most state or quasi-governmental agencies, we looked at that when we were creating the bylaws. But I have another part to that. Are there certain instances, you mentioned the public hearing process, when we can adopt Robert's Rules of Order during that particular period? I know for local entities you can do that, but I'm not sure exactly what the rules are for this type of agency. Instead of bringing something like this up, since our bylaws are pretty good, and as you've stated, we've used Robert's Rules of Order pretty much most of the time anyway. So why could we not, for instance, in that particular instance, adopt Robert's Rules of Order? I mean, I'm assuming we have been doing that most of the time, because in the meetings I've been attending, we've pretty much been following Robert's
Rules. Actually, we haven't.
Actually, we haven't.
There are two cases where it's come up recently, and they can ask for us to table something. The tabling would actually occur in our meetings, but Robert Rules of Order would have to be adopted for our meetings. That's one of them. The other one is the move to reconsider that you made on the Gaines Bend project. Mm-hmm. There's no mechanism defined in our bylaws to handle a reconsideration.
So under that situation, we kind of adopted Robert's Rules and the system worked.
We didn't adopt anything.
But that's not true, because we have been using Robert's Rules of Order. We have not maybe officially adopted it through a resolution, but we have been using the Rules of Order.
Laura Lee, did you want to?
I'm sorry.
Sir, I was going to be the screen, and I was going to say, with all due respect, there are ways to table, and they're going to back me up here. But there are ways to table. A director says, I don't think we're ready to vote. Let's not vote in this table.
Fine.
I agree. I think that's right. Okay.
Any other observations?
The same ways that you pull something off a consent agenda, whether it's because there's a period in the wrong place, because you don't like the issue, because you didn't like the way the vote went down, whatever, you still have room to pull that off.
I agree, Phil. I guess what I'm trying to say is, in Robert's Rules of Order, there are definite conditions on tabling something. It has to do with time limit, it has to do on reconsideration, and how it can be rebrought back up. Just simply not voting does not invoke all of those conditions. That's correct, Lori.
Really, what in my mind, what Robert's Rules of Order does is it sets parameters whereby you can table and you can't table. And so from my perspective, right now you're taking, at least the way I view it, and I think what we've actually done is we've taken Robert's Rules of Order as a guidance document. And when questions have come up, we try to refer to them as best we can. I'm by no means an expert parliamentarian. I mean, I pull out the book and try to look it up as quickly as I can. At the end of the day, to me, the most significant fact is if you adopt this guideline, if I were a board member or any one of you, I would get one of these five books or six books or whatever's out there, and you need to be familiar with this because it sets, like you're saying, a methodology for what you can and cannot do.
And it's not rocket science.
No, I mean, it's really not, but it is complex, and there are a lot of different provisions in it, and certainly if you are more versed in Robert's Rules, you can be more effective at accomplishing things in a meeting than if you're not versed in those rules. So
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Making a statement over here about us being a governmental agency and did we consider this and all of that. Most bylaws say anything covered in this, not covered in these bylaws, are covered by Robert's Rules of Order. That's beside the point. My question to you as a government agency, does the legislature use Robert's Rules of Order?
No. The legislature uses Mason's legislative manual.
I know that. That's why I asked the question.
Besides that, and I think along the same line as a quasi-state agency, it is traditional in state agencies, government agencies, it's almost a statement that says we're going to operate under the rules of the House of Representatives.
Yep.
Whatever they adopt at last governs all of us government agencies for the ensuing terms. And I think if nothing else, and then you go check those out, and what the House has adopted is Robert's Rules of Order or a version of Vernon's. So we really have a circular argument back and forth that I think that I'd like to see us have a procedure written in this situation, whatever rules we're going to operate our meetings by, because it'll save discussions and disagreements later on the line, particularly what requires two-thirds votes. Motions to reconsider, motions to table, even motions to amend. We sort of do it loosey-goosey right now. And it can lead us into situations down the line where procedurally we didn't do it right, even though we had the right intention.
And I asked the question on the legislature on purpose because I knew they used the other. And I'd be happy to use that one, too. I just think we need
this use.
I think our bylaws have been effective for a long time. I think they're still effective. I think we're working in a manner here that's democratically accepted, and I don't want any more books to read. And if you're ready for a motion, I move we withdraw item number 26.
Second.
What rules are you following now?
Mr. Hughes has made the motion, and there was several seconds, and I believe I heard one of the ladies over here, so pick one.
So what are we doing? We're voting to what?
Withdraw the resolution, item 27 from the
Senate. Rather than voting, would it help if I just withdrew it?
Do you mind, Mr. Moore?
I will withdraw it.
None.
You withdraw your motion, Mr. Hughes.
Vote.
Yes. Okay. The second's been withdrawn. Thank you.